the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, here we are at the beginning of 2021 with a lot of hope that the economy may be coming out of the lockdown. What does this mean for the vaccine, the virus itself? Joining me on the program is Dr. Leslie Sharp. She's a board-certified emergency physician with 20 years of practice. Doctor, I wonder if we can begin and just update us what you're seeing with the statistics regarding COVID.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me on your program today. Well, today, the current reports and the last statistics I have are from the week of February 26th. And we are definitely seeing a decrease throughout the country in ICU beds being occupied, as well as the percentage of those beds that are being occupied with COVID. So that's exciting news.
What about death rates in dealing with people that do get COVID? It's my understanding they've come up with various cocktails. Last year, we heard about former President Trump getting COVID, and he got some kind of cocktail. A week later, he was on the road campaigning. So can you tell us anything that's coming up with the treatment once you get it?
The treatments have not changed that significantly. Remdesivir is still one of the predominant medications that's being used. There are also a couple of other medications that are being used in anticipation of keeping patients out of the intensive care unit. And with several of those, they're being given to outpatients who have been diagnosed with COVID but are at high risk. And that is being successful in some cases in keeping them out of the hospital altogether.
Okay, so let's move on to the vaccines. We've got three out there now. We've got Pfizer, Moderna, and I guess Johnson & Johnson. Single shot has just been approved. What can you tell us about the availability of those vaccines, number one? And number two, can you address this issue that we see going around the internet that, you know, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine altered your DNA?
All right. Well, fortunately, the availability for all of these vaccines is increasing. Now, there's a little bit of a caveat to that because it's increasing as far as the production, as far as the different states getting that, but it's still a challenge to get those vaccines into people's arms. And that is a combination of individuals getting access. In some states, they're at all different levels. So in some states, they are still trying to give vaccines to the healthcare workers. They haven't even gotten to the general public yet, even the elderly. It's been very slow, and depending on what your particular state, how they're handling it, is making a huge difference. Here in Texas, I have plenty of individuals that are senior citizens who are still trying to get the vaccine, but it is becoming more and more available to them. That said, in the underserved populations, it's still a challenge, them getting information on where the vaccines are just being distributed, as well as getting to the different locations. There's so much involved with that, Jim.
Is there any major differences that they've discovered between, let's say, the three vaccines? Now, Johnson & Johnson just got released, so it's new, but what has been the experience of those getting vaccinated?
All right. Well, first of all, what you asked me as far as the altering DNA, none of these vaccines alter DNA. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are built on RNA, and that is not going to affect anyone's DNA. That is purely incorrect information. So there is no worry about that. I myself have been vaccinated. I was one of the first, since I am an emergency physician, and I did receive the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm still doing quite well, thank goodness. As far as the differences between the two, so the Johnson & Johnson cannot be compared at all to the Pfizer or Moderna, because the Johnson & Johnson is using a different way of introduction of the vaccine. As you know, that's a one-shot vaccination as opposed to the other two being two. And the Johnson & Johnson is using what's called an adenovirus, which most people associate with the common cold, which is the same virus. And that is using, and I'm going to use these words carefully, it does use a piece of DNA to make the distinctive spike protein. However, That's been modified so it can't replicate in the human body to cause illness. All right? I don't want anybody to be confused. It is not going to modify their DNA. What it does is when it allows the body to temporarily make that spike protein, it triggers an immune response and then allows the body to produce a response against the COVID disease. So that's how that works.
And in terms of effectiveness, have they found through testing any one vaccine more effective than the other? Let's talk about the first two, Pfizer and Moderna, and then recently the Johnson & Johnson.
Sure. So the Pfizer and Moderna have been given numbers from 95 to 97% effective. The Johnson & Johnson, currently they're rating it at about an 85% effectiveness. And there is a caveat to that as well. So just because an individual has been vaccinated and you're not considered complete for any of them until 2 weeks after your final vaccination, that does not mean that it's impossible for you to get the virus. You can still get the virus. However, if you do contract the virus, it is not going to cause a severe enough illness to require hospitalization or anything further. So we've got to be very careful as far as that goes, because people are under the false assumption, well, nothing can possibly happen to me and there's no way that I can transmit it to other people. But that's not entirely true.
So you can still get it, but the symptoms would not be as lethal as some people have had. But what about people with comorbidities? Does that change the outcome?
As far as if they've become vaccinated, yes, it does. They still are not going to get that severe response to the COVID disease that others would. So they're not finding that they're even requiring hospitalization. That's why it's so important for those people with comorbidities to be vaccinated as soon as it's available to them.
Can you explain the difference? Like, I know the Pfizer vaccine has to be frozen or refrigerated. Does that make it more difficult to get?
It certainly does. And that has to do with the fact that the vaccine will only remain viable for such a short period of time from the time it is thawed to go into someone's arm. So that's one of the big differences between the Pfizer and Moderna and the new Johnson & Johnson, because the Johnson & Johnson can actually be stable for up to 3 months at a temperature between 36 and 46 degrees Fahrenheit, so normal refrigeration.
Given the fact that we've got these three vaccines now and we're rolling it out, you know, assuming, I guess the president is hoping to have enough vaccines for all Americans by May, so by summer, we should start seeing a lot of, I would say, drop-off, would you expect, from hospitalizations, ICU, and also deaths?
I certainly hope so. Once again, it goes back to getting those into people's arms, not just the production, but actually getting them into people's arms, yes.
Well, let's talk about something. You are in Texas, and I want to bring this up because your governor has opened up the state. You don't have to wear a mask. What has been the experience of Texas and Florida, let's say, compared to other states, like my own state of California, where we've been in severe lockdowns pretty much for the last 12 months?
Well, Jim, that mask mandate lifting, I think for some people, they will have a measure of relief. And I think that there are plenty of others who are not going to change their practices whatsoever. And I say that because just here locally, I'm in a town called Abilene, and in here, most of the businesses that I've heard of so far are still going to require masks if you enter their premises. So it's not, you know, you're not going to be arrested if you don't have one, but I think just for their combination between concern for the public as well as liability standpoint, I think most of them are going to continue practicing that.
All right. Well, let's address some of the issues that we've had to deal with in the last 12 months. A lot of them is wearing masks. Originally, I think when you and I were talking, it was washing your hands and wearing gloves. That moved towards masks as the disease progressed and we learned more about it. So what about the effectiveness of wearing masks and also these lockdowns? Because here in California, we went through three phases of lockdowns. We locked down at the beginning, then we began to open up in May, then we got another spike in people getting it, and then all of a sudden that lifted, and then once again we went back in. So anything or any news coming out about the effectiveness of wearing masks and the lockdowns themselves?
Well, there's been a lot of speculation as far as mask wearing, as well as the facts as they've been displayed. Masking has definitely shown to be a great barrier for reducing the spread of the virus. That being said, we've even noticed in the emergency departments that the number of flu infections has been severely decreased by the fact that people are wearing masks. Because remember, the flu is spread quite similarly. And so that has been a secondary gain. As far as hand washing, that still continues to be of utmost importance. The gloves have pretty much fallen by the wayside because most people were wearing the same pair of gloves all day, which weren't really doing much for them.
In your lifetime, have you ever seen anything like this? I guess the last time we came across this was 100 years ago. But, you know, over the last couple of decades, we've dealt with SARS, MERS, and various forms. Why was this one so severe compared to, let's say, H1N1 and SARS and the other, let's say, viruses that preceded it?
It was a combination of things. I think the main things were the fact of how easily it was being spread, the number of overall deaths in the U.S. as well as throughout the world, and the fact that it did spread so quickly from one country to another. I think those are the main things that made it so different, as the previous seemed almost to be confined to certain areas. I think those are the major differences that we have found. And no, Jim, fortunately, I've never experienced anything like this because I'm slightly under 100 years old.
Well, you might have read about it anyway. So what about, as we look at this going forward, is there anything that you think the medical profession has learned in terms of dealing with a virus like this?
I definitely think so. From the vaccine standpoint, there have been a lot of experimentation done prior to this, working with RNA vaccines. One of the most well-known prior to this was working with it for Ebola. And that is why they had a lot of the research underway long before COVID came around. And that's why they were able to produce vaccines a lot faster. So that was one of the great lessons. But going forward, I think it still is all going to hinge on public understanding and us working as a community. Because as you mentioned before, those spikes that you had in California, those spikes were, generally speaking, related to the holidays between Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. A lot of people chose to meet with their family, get with their friends, still have those close interactions that they were being warned against. And so a week, 2 weeks afterward, that's when those spikes occurred. So I think it's a combination of us as individuals doing our part, not necessarily that it has to be mandated or not mandated, but if we work together, we can actually decrease a lot of the adverse outcomes.
Now, what about as you look at these vaccines? I know with the flu vaccine, you have to get one, like, you know, they tell you get your flu vaccine each year. With COVID, do you see that happening? In other words, we'll have to get a vaccine every single year?
I really do see that. That's purely speculation, but if we look at the COVID variants that are out there right now, so there are three main variants here in the U.S. The first one was discovered in the U.K. The second one was identified in South Africa, and the third one was identified in Brazil. And the one that's most common in the U.S. and the just over 3,000 cases is the one that was found in the U.K., and it spreads more easily and quickly and has been associated with increased deaths subsequently as compared to the other variants, as well as what we are accustomed to now. And that hit the U.S. shores, or at least was first found in the U.S. in December. And so if we're going to continue to get mutations, which all viruses do have mutations, and that's why we require a vaccination each year for the flu, I think that we'll continue to have mutations. Some of those mutations might not make any difference. Others will. So I do think we will need to have that going forward.
Okay, so let me throw this out. So let's assume that you got the, let's say, the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, and so you've been vaccinated. So if you do get COVID, it's going to be less severe. What happens a year later if you don't get a vaccine? In other words, how long is this vaccine effective?
That's a good question, Jim. Right now, we don't know for sure. It's too early to know that for sure. So I think time will tell. And I think that the science community will continue to monitor this very closely, as well as continually work on vaccines against the different variants as they come along.
So as we look at this, this could be part of our lives. Do you see it, though, with the vaccines being rolled out? And let's assume that it becomes readily available, just like normal flu vaccines that we get each year, that the economy, and I guess life as we knew it prior to COVID, would get back to normal.
I think we've probably established a new normal, to be honest. That's a little frightening to think of. I don't see it. When I say that new normal, no, I think that we will be able to open up as far as restaurants and theaters and the like, but keeping in mind that there will always be something else coming down the pipeline. And from a mental perspective, that the awareness has changed. So I do think many things and most things will return to normal. All children will be back in schools, etc.
So, doctor, as we close, you would recommend to anybody that they do get the vaccine. It's proven to be effective. It reduces the risk, especially somebody that has comorbidity, of if they do get COVID, it'll be less severe.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to point out that the CDC came out with some new guidelines for those who are fully vaccinated. And this is especially important to families, grandparents. They are now, if you've been fully vaccinated, which means you got your last shot 2 weeks ago or longer, you can now visit other fully vaccinated individuals without masks, without social distancing, as well as those with low risk that are unvaccinated from single households. So going to visit your grandchildren, not a problem if you've been vaccinated. You can also refrain from quarantining and testing even after you've been exposed to a COVID positive individual. So a known exposure, don't even need to be tested or quarantined anymore. However, still recommended you wear masks and practice physical distancing when with other individuals outside of single household or from multiple household or people at increased risk for COVID symptoms. And obviously, if you're vaccinated and you do get any symptoms, that's when you still need to be tested. And of course, avoiding large size in-person gatherings. So that's great news from the CDC right now.
All right. Well, listen, doctor, we appreciate you coming on the program and updating our listeners. Thanks so much. And I hope you come back and talk to us again.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.